listening to the Derms and Conditions podcast.
Well, I'm Dr. Jim Del Rosso, a dermatologist in Las Vegas, Nevada, and this is a very special edition of Derms and Conditions podcasts. We had an important issue that came to light to us in dermatology that we need to find out more about. And I am a dermatologist. I run a clinical research center. I also consult on clinical research, have a pharmacy background, and obviously work with for Derms and Conditions on the podcast with the Derm Squared group. So I have a very special guest today, David Light, who is president of Valisure. And Valisure is the company that did file the citizens petition with the FDA regarding benzoyl peroxide and benzene. We're going to get into that a little bit later. So David, would you just introduce yourself and then we'll get to Dr. Bunick.
Sure. Thank you very much for having me today. And my name is David Light. I'm one of the co-founders and president of Valisure. I'm a scientist by training, been in the biotech industry for a number of years, and then started Valisure with a number of friends from college that were very concerned about the status of drug quality and looking at it from an independent standpoint.
We also have with us someone that's well known to us in dermatology. He's a colleague and also a good personal friend that has been a consultant for Valisure and obviously has been involved in a lot of areas in dermatology. So that's Dr. Chris Bunick. So Chris, will you introduce yourself?
Hi, yeah, I'm Christopher Bunick. I'm an associate professor of dermatology and translational biomedicine at Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut.
And what has your role been with Valisure?
Yeah, so I have served as a medical and dermatologic advisor to Valisure in an unpaid and financially independent way. So I'm an unpaid advisor to them with no financial connections.
That's consistent with Chris Bunick's dedication to dermatology. So we certainly thank you for that. So in the first part, we're going to do this in two parts. This is a very important issue in dermatology. There's been a lot of talk about it. I've heard from a lot of different people and spoken to different people about questions and concerns surrounding benzoyl peroxide, which we've had for years, and the issue related to benzene, which was a surprise to the majority of us. But I want to start with the company Valisure. So what is Valisure and what do you do and what don't you do at Valisure?
Absolutely. So at the very highest level, Valisure was founded on the core concept of doing independent quality assurance for pharmaceuticals and pharmacy products, very much like you might have a J.D. Power and Associates for cars or a Consumer Reports, a kosher label, organic, all these kinds of independent reviews and certifications for all sorts of products that we use every day is unfortunately missing entirely from the pharmaceutical industry. And there are many regulated industries, electronics. You can't buy a lamp or a power cord in the United States without it being independently tested by UL. Look at the back of your power adapter and you'll see all these stamps of quality. Even cars, heavily regulated, but you have all these independent reviews. And I think in pharmaceuticals, there's this assumption that the FDA is out there testing everything, and it's the United States, everything is FDA approved. And although they work hard at the FDA, it is a self-regulated industry when it comes to testing. The FDA is not out there testing products. It's very rare that they do perform tests in special situations. And in manufacturing, it's all on the manufacturers to self-report this data. And they do it in a world of testing called GMP, Good Manufacturing Practice. And if you want to be an independent lab, very much like Europe has dozens of, you are ISO accredited, which is the International Organization for Standardization. So very importantly, Valisure is an ISO accredited laboratory and technology company that infuses this concept of independent review, independent quality certification to pharmacy products. And today we work a lot with large health systems and purchasers like Kaiser Permanente, like the United States military and the military health system, where we add this transparency to quality so they can make the best possible purchasing decisions, ideally buy green, and also certify that that stays green over the time that a manufacturer is buying those products. And the last thing I'll say about Valisher is that as we're looking for the green, as we're looking for the best quality products for pharmacies and healthcare systems, we sometimes find the red. We sometimes find products that are problematic. And when we see it happening in a very broad sense in a big category like sunscreen or hand sanitizers or all drug products related to Zantac and ranitidine, which is the generic for Zantac that we filed a petition on in 2019. And now with benzoyl peroxide again, we found this broad issue and we'll often publish studies, file FDA citizen petitions, and even in benzoyl peroxide, just to say that we actually had a peer-reviewed paper just published yesterday in the journal Environmental Health Perspectives on benzoyl peroxide drug products forming benzene. So that's hopefully a good amount of background on Valisher and what we are.
So people have questions about it, and you obviously, unrelated just specifically to benzoyl peroxide and benzene, the company's been involved with looking at a variety of other products, but who initiates that? Are there people from the outside that come to you and contract with you? I mean, you obviously have to pay for doing this. What's that side of it? Like, who initiates what's being looked at? How do you decide ranitidine or benzoyl peroxide or whatever, a sunscreen product? Or do you just find this on your own and have ways that you fund independently? People want to know, what's the financial source of what's happening with Valisher?
Sure. So we are a startup company that's venture backed. So we actually have a lot of capability to grow the impact of our business and do it quickly. From the standpoint of where these issues get identified and what do we decide to focus on, in the day-to-day of our business, working for clients like health systems or pharmacies, we had a pharmacy ourselves for a few years. Until we sold it to a pharmacy chain. We are constantly looking through hundreds of different drug products. So certain health systems or certain pharmacies might have a focus in particular areas that are of high interest to them, or we just look broadly at high volume products that go through a pharmacy. And as we're doing that, we see quality signals all the time, either ourselves or sometimes technology partners will alert us, or others throughout the kind of scientific ecosystem may bring things or quality concerns to our attention. But very often, just in this day-to-day work, we will identify an issue and we'll regularly use just the excess capacity of our laboratory to dig deeper into these problems. So these citizen petitions are self-funded by ourselves, where we're looking into a product and just dig deeper. I think oftentimes we say when we see a big problem, it's like seeing a train wreck. It's very hard to look away. You want to look deeper. It's really, as scientists and consumers and patients ourselves, I think it's important to do some extra work. When it's ready to publish, we publish it. So that's specifically, by the way, with the case of benzene back in 2020 and 2021, the FDA itself was publishing methods and had some concerns over the quality of hand sanitizers. That's where we take our benzene methods from. And so we incorporated benzene analysis into our standard screen for all sorts of products. And then we started finding it, unfortunately, all over the place, especially in dermatology products.
So taking it one step further, in the case of a benzoyl peroxide products, whether they be over the counter or by prescription, they're approved by the FDA, right? So looking back at that, we'll get into that a little bit more. If I had a company that had a product, and we had our research center and many others studied three of them that became FDA approved, two combination products and one that's actually approved for rosacea, just benzoyl peroxide alone. And that goes through the entire process. And then the FDA looks at it and approves it. So my understanding, to kind of sort this out, and if I say anything that's wrong, I have a pharmacy background. I read a lot. I hopefully understand it, but I'm not a chemist and I'm not, you know, in the weeds of what's going on with this, like you and some other people are, that the companies are required to meet standards that the FDA requests them to do. And part of that is stability. And from talking to some of the people at the companies that are more deeply involved with this, they have to report, I believe it's on 15 different chemical entities that could come out of stability with benzoyl peroxide. And benzene is one of those. I was going to get into this a little bit more later. So they have to give to the FDA what they find in that type of testing. But then eventually it gets to a package insert that has restrictions on the temperature with the handling and storage that they recommend. But we'll get to benzene a little bit later. But if you have a company and you're told, first of all, it's approved over the counter. They had a new monograph some years back, not that long ago, where they went through everything with benzoyl peroxide. And they said it's okay to have this over the counter within certain standards, like between 2.5 and 10%, variety of different formulations. Even several of the prescription products, the company stopped making them because it was available over the counter. So I have this product. I think I'm okay. I submitted to the FDA. They approved everything, and now I'm being told of this issue. So if you were one of the people that had a company like that, what would you recommend right now? I mean, where do we go from here?
So one important nuance in what you mentioned, and everything sounded right, except for, I'm not sure, but I would be surprised if the companies were actually testing for benzene as part of that stability testing or part of that overall analysis. That did not seem to be the case with sunscreens, antiperspirant, body sprays, hand sanitizer, which are all drug products, by the way, all regulated, FDA-approved drug products, where we found benzene, and they weren't testing for benzene. So they do test in manufacturing and in development for a lot of different product or a lot of different analytes and sometimes contaminants as well. But that box is assigned by the manufacturer of testing. That is a GMP, good manufacturing practice box. And sometimes it misses issues. It's not going to be infallible just like anything. And I think, honestly, good science and good additional quality assurance is when you look outside of a standard box. And that's what we've seen almost every time that Valisher's done a study. Even something like instability in a drug like Zantac, which is very similar, at least scientifically, to what we're seeing with benzoyl peroxide, where NDMA, the carcinogen that was being formed by Zantac, or the ranitidine molecule, was apparently not being tested for. It was not part of what was being submitted to regulators. And so it was missed. And when we came along and tested it and found it, then it had, it raised a lot of concerns, and a lot of the industry started testing. And then they found it, which is also the case in benzene and sunscreens and others, is once this is identified, then it gets tested for. So to your question of what to do next, obviously need more science, more confirmation, more engagement from the manufacturers. If you see the FDA statements, at least to the press, it's very clear telling them that manufacturers are responsible for the safety of their product. And again, people need to understand that the FDA rarely tests. They might test now that this issue has been brought to light, and actions need to be taken.
But it doesn't mean that the manufacturers, the companies, didn't do everything that they were asked to do to get their product
for sure
approved. This is just, and we'll get into why benzoyl peroxide is different than just contamination. If you're using a raw material, but your active ingredient has nothing to do with benzene, versus that benzoyl peroxide can be degraded to benzene. So what about how you've been looked at? I know the FDA, I believe, did come in and look at Valisher. So what was some of the results of that that you can share with us?
So yeah, very high level. The FDA, I believe, had essentially a misunderstanding of what Valisher does in terms of the type of testing. They regulate GMP testing facilities. There's hundreds of labs in the United States that are essentially extensions of pharmaceutical manufacturers. So they perform the regulatory testing, that testing you're talking about, in terms of what the manufacturers have to submit to the FDA, have to be part of regulatory packages, approval packages. That is done either by the manufacturer directly in their own lab, or they hire an outside lab occasionally to do that kind of testing for them, which from the lens of the FDA as a regulator, that means they're essentially part of the manufacturer and therefore regulated as a GMP facility, a good manufacturing practice facility. Valisher is not, which is unique in the United States. We were the first one to ever do it in the U.S. The University of Kentucky Health System has also launched a program where they're independently testing the drug products through their hospital systems. Europe has over 70 of these. There's actually a designation called an Official Medicine Control Laboratory, an OMCL. When we were invited to the White House a couple of times last year to talk about these kinds of quality issues, and the quality issues, by the way, are the number one reason for a drug shortage, which has been a big hot button topic.
I was just going to get to that, ask you about that. Yep.
Yeah. So, it all boils down to these kinds of quality problems. And honestly, in the United States, a lack of independent review and using that kind of data and purchasing decisions. So all of this boiled down to, I think, the FDA just trying to double check of are we GMP or not. They gave us an untitled letter that's often misquoted in the press as a warning letter. It's not a warning letter. We're not part of the FDA regulatory system. And they did mention that there are quote-unquote deficiencies in our testing which would relate to GMP. And again, the most important thing to understand about GMP is that it is very formulation specific. So you will have you could have a completely different GMP testing system for Advil than you do for Motrin, right? They're both 200 milligrams of ibuprofen, but they're two different manufacturers. And so the regulatory paperwork, the testing could be very different for one versus the other. But obviously, if you're a Yale University or if you're any sort of academic researcher or an independent laboratory that's ISO accredited, you're just going to look at it as ibuprofen. And that is where the friction between research science and ISO accredited independent testing has friction with GMP, which is natural. Right, they're completely different. Again, this is what is done a lot in Europe as kind of a spot checking system. And that is the core of what Valisher is doing, is not just spot checking, but actually including it into the pharmaceutical supply chain for large health systems and purchasers. So that's where the FDA inspection and letter came in. And we've addressed that. We're happy if anybody wants to read the letters that we've written back to review that. And we continue to function as an ISO accredited independent laboratory.
So being involved with a lot of this, especially with dermatology products, there's been a significant increase in drug shortages. We have drugs that are manufactured within the United States, many outside the United States. And I had read, correct me if I'm wrong, that a good 3/4 of the explanation for drug shortages were that manufacturing facilities were found to be deficient and they were either temporarily shut down or they had to stop manufacturing a product. And what does that mean? Those chemical entities are not available for use, and drug shortages have been the impetus for a lot more independent testing has become a lot more popular because of that particular issue. So I'm going to ask Chris if he has any questions he wants to ask before we get to part two and dig down into the benzene based on Valisher and what they do. I know you did have an agreement with the Department of Defense that they want you to look at products and find if there are any that are substandard, because they don't want people in the military or the veterans. They want to make sure they're getting good quality products, and they're looking at it independently. They're not, just not going by the standard approval of the product. So that was, I believe, in August 2023, I read that started. But Chris, do you have any other questions for David before we move on to part two?
Yeah, thank you, Jim. So one of the things I'd like to just bring up is the track record of Valisher. So David, my understanding is that over the years, you've had somewhere on the order of 8 or 9 different findings of benzene or other carcinogen in products. And how many times has your findings led to recalls for each of these different drug products?
Practically every one of these petitions has led to recalls and other industry actions, sometimes entire market withdrawal, as the case with Zantac and ranitidine products.
So that's going to lead us into the second part. But, you know, your hope is that you're not going to find anything. It's not like, oh, we're trying to go out and get this guy or that guy. And that it doesn't necessarily mean that the manufacturers did anything wrong, you know, according to the standards that they're asked to meet. It's just an independent testing outside of what is being required. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, you know, and I appreciate that point. I think it often gets missed because understandably, people get very focused on the red, right? When something is bad, and even as you mentioned, you know, the military program, it's not just to weed out the red, which obviously is important, but the core reason for drug shortages and all these, you know, kind of disease of quality problems, of which you have symptoms like drug shortages and many others like finding reds. But ideally, and really the focus is incentivizing green. You know, we want this kind of quality transparency so that the purchasers have that data to see what is green, use their procurement
green
dollars for green.
Things are being done on the good side. Right.
Right. And right. By the way, most of what we look at is green. The vast majority of what we test is just fine, doesn't have a lot of issues, and can be, you know, the quote unquote green. So incentivizing more of that, getting the transparency for it, buying green. And when there is a red, having a transparent path to fix it, to become green. I don't believe any of these manufacturers would purposely put benzene in their products. Of course not. But it happens sometimes. The mistakes happen. There's issues that can fly under the radar no matter what you do. So adding quality assurance, adding incentive for green, transparency for it, and incentive for it, I think is very important. That is the core focus of everybody that we work with.
Well, I would imagine when you find red, you have to let it be known. You can't let it sit and say, well, we don't think this is very important. We're not going to bring this public. So I'm going to stop
Absolutely.
At this point so we can get to the second part, Chris and David, and we're going to really drill down on the benzoyl peroxide benzene issue. So thank you to both of you, and we're going to move on to the second podcast. Thank you for listening to this episode of Derms and Conditions. If you have any questions, please email us at podcast@dermsquared.com. That's podcast at dermsquared.com. Podcast@dermsquared.com.